You're listening to Cattails.
Hi, and welcome to another edition of Cattails. This tale is about one of the best rock blues guitarists of his generation. It starts with a boyhood dream and ends with him playing alongside some of the rock greats of the last 40 years. Co-founder of Whitesnake, he counts many of the band's hits amongst his songwriting repertoire and co-wrote one of the most successful rock ballads of all time, the multi-million chart topper Here I Go Again. With an amazing solo career, collaborations with the cream of the industry and a successful autobiography, he has been described as a musical treasure and a legend. This is The One with Bernie Marsden.
Welcome to the show, Bernie. How are you?
Seem to have a lot of time on my hands.
It's a funny old world at the moment, you have to say.
It gives me a chance to talk to people like you, so that's okay.
Yeah, so it's not all bad, is it? Well, at least from my perspective.
Nah. Right, yeah. So, last time I saw you, it was a pouring of rain, if I remember rightly.
Oh, I think it was. It was a gloomy day, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah. I think we were in the courtyard, wasn't it? Something like that there.
Yes, exactly. At least it's a bit better weather at the moment, although we can't go out in it.
I know, it's really, really odd. So, good. So you've been busy?
I have been busy, actually, and I've been trying to fill my time as well with this lockdown business and trying to catch up with a few people that I've known before and, you know, make the most of it, really, because you've got to, haven't you? What have you been up to?
Not surprisingly, doing quite a lot of interviews, 10 minutes on the phone, and makes people happy, and it's all okay.
Yeah, it keeps us all alive, doesn't it? And keeps our brains active, doesn't it? From sort of going a bit spongy during this time. So, I've been reading some of your excerpts from your memoirs, actually. That's what I've been doing to fill my time. And it's gripping stuff, I have to say. So, what possessed you to be so frank and honest in the first place and actually put it all on paper?
Well, it started off about 10 years ago when I've got two girls, and they were both, maybe more than 10 years ago, because I just wanted them to write something down, because you know, we're running around the world all the time and stuff. You say, well, do they actually know what I do, kind of thing, you know? So I started to write down some stuff, you know, not so much a journal, just how I started off and stuff like that. And then I got into it a bit and I started to write other stuff. I realised that my memory was much better than I expected it to be. and also with the aid of the internet, of course, which probably was very important, you know, checking stuff at first. Well, when was that? Well, that must have been 1975. And of course, you can sort of think, why didn't you check? So I did. And, you know, it all started to come together. I then did about probably 120 pages or something. And I sent it to a friend of mine who was a proper writer. He's written stuff on Gary Moore and Eric Clapton and Jack Bruce and stuff. And, he's a good pal of mine. And I sent it to say, is this worth persevering with? And expect them to say, you know, just keep playing the guitar, son. Keep playing the guitar, kind of, you know?
Yeah.
And thought I wouldn't hear back from him for at least a month. And he called me back in a day or so and said, I've read it. He said, and this could be really good. And he said, you know, and he helped me out a lot, because he said, stop worrying about punctuation. He said, people do that for you when you publish it, stuff like that. And because I was a bit naive, really, you know, well, more than a bit.
And, I'm sure you're not.
So then we crowdfunded the first version of it. And that was going to be a crowdfund for, I think, for 3 months. And the figure that we put in was reached within a week.
Wow.
And we realised that there was a lot of interest and demand for such a thing. So that went really well. And then a year and a half ago, HarperCollins came in, you know, Big Bad Publishers, and they offered me, an update, an upgrade, and to become one of their writers. So that's why the new version is out now and doing very, very well. We came out in November, actually.
Wow, that's brilliant. I mean, why did you actually go ahead and do the second version? Is it very much different from the first? Obviously, you've got a professional.
Not really. It's more professional, because it's been looked at by people who do it for a living rather than, you know, but there's a certain freshness in the original version, which is nice. And but it is better. There are typos and stuff and, you know, the usual things. The photographs are different and the covers are different, slightly changed the title. But, a lot more people have been reached with obviously with a professional publisher than I could have hoped to have reached before. But, you know, and it did really well originally, Kat, with the, you know, with the crowdfunding version. I was amazed. I was, you know, not absolutely knocked out. But, you know, now I'm getting emails on a daily basis, especially at the moment, the last 3 months, you know, from literally all over the world, where I'm sitting on a beach reading your book, I'm sitting in an igloo reading your book. And one guy is on an Antarctic expedition. He got one for Christmas.
Terrific.
So that could never happen from, you know, the crowdfunding kind of thing. But so it's been really good. And I was planning to go out and do a book tour in September, October. Mm. But that's looking pretty unlikely now. But we did one in November into December, and that was really good. And it's just a different thing for me. You know, I take a guitar with me. And we play a few songs and do a Q&A, and it's all good fun.
And tell a few stories along the way. Sounds like a good show, actually.
Yeah,
so,
it is.
Just to remind everybody what we're talking about here, it's your book, Where's My Guitar, isn't it? And you've actually, you know, you've been really good about telling your entire story there, which I think is so refreshing. Was it difficult for you to decide, you know, what goes in and what goes out? How honest do I be? And, you know, did that sort of worry you about upsetting a few people?
Not really, because I've the career I've had, you know this, I find it's very hard work to be negative about somebody.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, it takes more energy to be nasty than just to be nice.
Yes.
And I thought the best thing I could do, that there are, you know, nobody's perfect, and there are a few people in my career who I thought, you know, the best thing I can do is not even mention them.
Yeah.
Because that will annoy them even more. Kind of
thing. Yes, that's true.
And so that's what's happened. So there are some gaps, and a couple of people have picked up on it. And I just say, well, you know, I've got nothing to say, you know. Yeah. But I wanted also to tell the story, you know, as it happened, really, you know, in a chronological way, because everybody's, you know, especially for my generation, once we've seen the Beatles and stuff, and you know, whatever, you had your heroes, and you wanted to say that, I'd like to do that. Well, these days you can say at school, I want to be a rock star. And you can say, well, there's a course for that.
Yes, it's mad, isn't it?
It doesn't guarantee anything, of course. But
no.
At least you can, you know, I wasn't laughed at. I was encouraged by, you know, a couple of people. But overall, it was like, you know, that can't be your job, you know. Mm-hmm. And I wanted in the book to put across that it can be your job. And if you work hard and if you have the talent.
Well, it's all down to the talent, really, isn't it? And you've been in demand because of that talent, as you can see through the book, and obviously your career. And that's what sets you aside. Let's be honest. You're being too modest here, Bernie. You're being too modest.
Well, I've been lucky, you know. I grew up in a small town, and I still live close to it, you know. And even though I lived in London for 20 odd years, you know, there was always that thing pulling you back. But you know, you just need to realize that once I could play, then I started to play with people who are really good, and I've been very fortunate to play with some of the greatest players in my genre of their generation, so I can't ask for more than that, you know. So as Cozy Powell used to say, well, you must be all right yourself, mustn't you, you know. And I'm going, well, yeah, but you always have that thing, you know, like, well, maybe I'm getting away with this, you know?
Yeah, it's that imposter syndrome, isn't it? I think
I recently found out about that. I didn't know about that. Yeah.
It takes a lot of guts to go up on stage like you do, though. So you've got to almost like go, well, do you know what? I either think I'm brilliant, or I'm just going to pretend I'm brilliant. One of the two.
That's to do with, you know, if I walk out on a stage without a guitar, you see a different person. Mm. It's that thing, like, once you, you know, it's like, ladies and gentlemen, 1:01, will you welcome?
Yeah.
And I'm as nervous as anybody at that 1 minute before. Say, not so much nervous, but the adrenaline is building. But the moment you walk on that stage and see people smiling and ready to have a good time, you know, then you're doing your job.
Yes.
And if your job is enjoyable, like anything in life, you know, you're going to look forward to going to work.
Well, this is it, isn't it? And I think people forget actually it is a job. And whilst it's a job, I think you've got to remember, though, that people in your position have been almost lucky enough to make a living out of something they love doing. And that's such a privileged position, isn't it?
I'm still lucky enough to have my dad. He's 94, and he'll come over to the house, whatever, and I'll be trying to change a light bulb or something. And he would just look at me as if I'm 15 and say, it's a bloody good job you can play that guitar.
Yes. Where did it all go right?
I'm not very handy. I was trying to do some relative handy work yesterday. As I say, my two girls are working from home. And they both had the giggle because they said, watching me try to do handyman stuff is just hysterical. They were absolutely in floods.
So don't give up the day job, Dad.
He just said it doesn't look right. I said, no, I'm not very good either.
You know? Yeah, that's terrific, isn't it? Well, we've all got skills in different areas. That's all we can say,
exactly.
Bernie.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
So looking back a little bit, so, you know, you're it's very difficult to actually look at your highlights in your career without mentioning, obviously, Whitesnake. I mean, that's the obvious place where it all sort of, like, happened, wasn't it? Do you sometimes feel that overshadows your whole career and where you are now?
No, I don't. I mean, I think overshadow is the wrong word, because what it is, it creates the reason I can talk to you now in 2020. Mm. You know, I played with some very, very good players before that. I mean, John Lord, Ian Paice, you know, before Whitesnake.
Yeah.
And that was the musical ladder. You know, working with these people and realizing that, oh, well, this guy I first turned pro with when I was with UFO, for instance,
yeah,
he's a really good drummer, you know, and he was better than the guys I played with before I turned pro.
Yes.
And I thought the standard was going to be the same all the way through. Then I realized how much better Cozy Powell was than him.
Yes.
And then you think, well, yes, because Cozy Powell played with Jeff Beck. And it all started to make more sense once I was part of it. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And I think Whitesnake is you know, the dream of everybody, to be in a band that becomes that successful. You know, even though there's hundreds of artists, you know, to be that successful and become a household name within that group is the dream of dreams. And I mean, I've been out of Whitesnake for 35 years now, mm-hmm. and yet here I am talking about it. Well, that just sums it up, really. So I think overshadow is not, you know, it's a highlight, and yet a highlight for me was playing with Joe Bonamassa last year.
Yeah.
So highlights are what you want to make of them yourself, in a way. When I look back on it now, and that's what the book's all about, and that's what we're talking about before, is you realise that the roller coaster was enormous.
Yes.
And if you could have taken more of it on, and you know, and then you go into the business side of stuff and you think, well, if we'd have done this and if we'd have done that, you know, but you can't change things. You know, what's done is done and it's into the future. And, you know, I've enjoyed myself just as much post. I didn't enjoy it much as you read the book. I wasn't in a pretty good state of mind for about a year afterwards. But then you just dust yourself down and get on with it, so to speak.
Yeah, well, it must have been a bit of a shock, really, because you weren't expecting it, were you, the departure from the band? And I think that's...
No, I mean, some of it was kind of self-instigated, because there was a lethargy within the group because of we were really poorly managed.
Yeah.
And it was like that, we're going nowhere kind of thing. But David and I both had, we were in the room together. It's like we sort of said to each other, well, we're going nowhere, but not realising what we'd already done.
Yeah, yeah.
But we were 20, you know, 28 years old, 29 years old, whatever. Maybe 30.
Yeah.
You know, you don't really know, you know, and he'd been through it all before, obviously with Deep Purple as well.
Sure.
And I don't think he could have expected that the way that Whitesnake was to change, metamorphize into what it did in America in the late 90s. The late 80s into the 90s, which became enormous. But it was a very different group. I could listen and see Whitesnake in those days, no different than going to see Foreigner or Journey or something. You know, it was just a band that happened to be the same name that the group that I was in. People always say, oh, I love the old band, which is nice, and it's very, very, you know, it's a very good thing for them to say to me. But it doesn't make any difference to me, because what is done was done. And I had my time, and we had a great time, and we made some great records. And that's good enough for me. I'm not bothered about what really happened afterwards, even though I had the success of writing a certain song.
Yes, exactly. Multi-million seller, I think is the phrase, isn't it?
Yeah.
What I'd like to do is play a track of yours. If there was one that you wanted to feature, what would it be?
Child of Babylon.
Okay, right, nice choice.
That's probably an unusual choice, but it sort of sums up the way the band was at the time. And, the collectiveness of the band was pretty much peaking around that time. Hi, this is Bernie Marsden, and you are listening to Cats tales. Enjoy.
Lovely. And so you're very proud of that moment, I take it.
I'm very proud of the White Snake stuff. You know, it's some. Recently, I started to listen to a few bits and pieces that I hadn't heard in a while. I did a thing on YouTube at the moment. Not YouTube, what do you call it? Instagram. Mm. I did Trouble, one of the first songs we wrote together. And you realise that, you know, oh, that was a much better song than I thought it was, you know. And then you go, oh, and so is this one, and so is that one. So it comes back to the imposter's syndrome again, doesn't it?
It does. But of course, you know, the bit about songwriting, of course, is that it is very much of that moment, isn't it? And at least you've had the opportunity to continue that skill and that that gift, I guess, since then, haven't you?
Well, I mean, I'm awaiting now Joe Bonamassa's next record, because him and I worked together last year and in January this year, and we've written, as Joe said to me, well, we've written most of the album, so, and I've heard two or three tracks, and it's pretty amazing, and he wanted to have an influence, somebody different, you know, about whether he wanted to change his style, and we haven't changed his style, but there's a bit of the way I write songs, well, more than a bit, in the stuff that we've obviously put together, and put together his guitar playing and the way he performs with a great band. We have a little treasure coming out in a few months, I can assure you.
Oh, that sounds exciting.
When I say that's as a writer, because I'm not part of the band.
No, that's right. No, I understand that. But isn't that great to be playing with Joe Bonamassa? I mean, he's such a talent as well, isn't he? That's to have
He is. You know, he's the reminder of me at his age or whatever, you know, being in a band. And if I could have had the nerve or the gall and maybe have had the guidance, maybe I could have been a Joe Bonamassa when I was, you know, in my 30s, instead of being badly treated and managed badly. You know. But I don't want to come across as, you know, like I try not to in the book, as saying at the end, you know, when it all boiled down, I signed those contracts with these people. And that's, so at the end of it, it's down to me. So I could have done, maybe I let myself wallow a little bit too much after the end of Whitesnake, and, you know, until I decided I would get out there and do it again. But what Joe's doing is everything that I would have liked to have done anyway. So working with him on a day-to-day basis is fantastic, especially somebody of my advancing years.
You may say that, Bernie, but I couldn't possibly comment.
Well, unfortunately, it's true whatever way you look at it, because he was 10 years younger than when I first met him, and he's 10 years older. That means I must be as well.
Yes. Time waits for no man, does it? Just keeps on
plodding
on. So there's obviously Joe Bonamassa there. Rory Gallagher, I know that you're a big fan of as well. You know, who would you rate as one of the best blues guitarists of all time?
Oh, of all time?
Yeah.
I would have to go for acoustically, you're probably looking at somebody like Robert Johnson, or maybe Mississippi John Hurd. But of the modern era, and I mean electrically, and I have to say B.B. King.
Lovely. Very nice. Very nice.
And because of B.B. King, you see, then you have my generation, because of Eric Clapton taking his records and putting them onto record, and Freddie King, and then Rory listening to those records when he was, because he was a bit older than me, but in between the two.
Yeah.
And then I first heard Rory when I was about 17, going like, oh, the hell is this?
Yeah.
And, you know, I became a great fan of Rory's, and fortunately became a, you know, good friend as well. But, you know, he was one of the, well, he's a national hero. It's just that, you hear his music now, and it's still hard to take on board that he hasn't been around for such a long time. And he was one of the great, great guys, but a fantastic guitar player as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's what's so nice about the music industry and the career that you've had, that you've played with such a lot of brilliant people and lots of different types of players as well, haven't you? No, it's not just emanating what you do, it's about how it all gels together.
No, I did a piece last week with an album that never actually, only a bit of it ever saw the light of day. But I worked with Andy Taylor from Duran Duran.
Oh, right.
We did a load of writing and playing together. That was totally different. You know, I got to play with the Allman Brothers in New York a few years ago. I mean, all this stuff, you know, kind of put on a wish list. You just thought, no, well, that's never going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, and then sitting down in a room with B.B. King or sitting in a room with Louisiana Red or whatever. And, you know, you just don't think these things are going to happen. I spent, I realized an hour with Little Richard in Nottingham about 12, 15 years ago. After his show, and because I'd been playing with a Ringo Starr band, I was kind of ushered into the dressing room, you know, and he was fantastic. You know, he'd just done his gig, so this is best part of 20 years ago, so he's probably the best part of 70. And he just kept saying to me, "You play with Ringo Starr?" And he said, "You tell him to call me." Richard won me to it. It was like that, you know. It was I think the main reason I was ushered backstage was because somebody said this guy plays with Ringo, but he was great, and he signed some records for me, and I, you know, there's another highlight for you, Kat. You know, you know, meeting these people that you don't really think about. Well, I knew I was doing something that night because I took these albums to get signed. I didn't expect him to sign them, but he did.
Oh, fabulous!
He did a great way to sign. I looked at them over the weekend when I heard of his passing. And even though I knew it was on there, but he signed it uniquely. He put to Bernie, and he put "God loves Little Richard." I didn't really think that, and I thought, you know, it just brought a smile to my face when I read it back to myself, you know, after all these years.
Yeah, that's great, yeah. Isn't it?
Yeah, really, 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 really cool. And he was great. And as I left the room, he said, "I hear you're one hell of a guitar player." I said, "Who told you that?" And he said, "Somebody."
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, that's just great. Wonderful.
I don't think that's in the book, so you got something there.
Oh, that's lovely. Thank you very much for that. And he's obviously a massive highlight. I mean, that's such a wonderful story. I mean, if you're looking back over all this, are there any other moments that really stand out for you?
Little Richard was a legend. Meeting B.B. for the first time, but that's in the book. So that was, you know, there's a photograph of me, and I literally do look like a kid in a candy store. And I, you know, I'm just, my eyes are wide open with this man, and he's giggling because you can obviously see it as well, you know. And that was good. I mean, playing with Ringo, you know, that was something else, you know, getting the calls, you know, and then learning the Beatles songs, having done so numerous times over the years, but then you're actually playing with one of them.
Yeah.
You know, that was a kind of a nice pressure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I bet it was.
Yeah. Right. And I mean, you know, like, well, there's Joe and there's Warren Haynes, who's fantastic, and Steve Lucas there has become a real close friend. And, you know, we get to play together when they come over, or if I visit them or whatever. And it's just such a nice thing to have these guys. You know, they give me quotes for the book and stuff, and I try to keep up with some of the younger ones as well, the new guys. And you know, there's some really good players out there, but a lot of them would say, "Well, I played because I heard a Whitesnake album when I was 15 and stuff." So, yeah. You know, it's like me with B.B. King when I was 15. So,
yeah.
What goes around comes around, which is great.
Yeah, and I think that's great, isn't it? Because then you can appreciate how they feel meeting you, and from your perspective, you're you, and you can't, you know, it's difficult to comprehend, but people will obviously have the same awe when they meet you as well, which is terrific, isn't it?
Yeah, and you kind of try to be as nice as you can. Well, I say try, you know, you be as nice as you can, and I'm there because I'm there to see these guys play, and then if they play good, well, I don't care whether they're, you know, 18 or 58 or whatever. If the first time I see them, I say, "Man, well, where have you been?"
Yeah, I know. Amazing, isn't it? There's some good talent out
there. That's
what's
good about the festival, because you get to see a lot of people there that, you know, you don't get a chance. That's how I become good friends with Johnny Gallagher.
Oh,
because and you know, and he's, you know, become a good friend of mine, and I didn't know much about Johnny until I'd, you know, been over there for the first or second time, and we become really close.
Yeah,
which is great.
And this is where, you know, lots of people get introduced to new talent and new people, don't they? And it just goes from there, doesn't it?
Yeah, and music is such a great leveler. You know, you can play your stuff, and walk out and be a guest for somebody and play their material, then vice versa. And it's just a good feeling, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you've been described as a musical treasure and a legend. Now, how would you like to be remembered? Are they the sort of words that you want to be described as, you know, on your epitaph at the end? Or is there something else? How would you like to be remembered?
I think something along the lines of when I did the first solo album, I thought this album is dedicated to people who were told to get a real job. Don't.
That's a great bit of advice, isn't it? Yeah. Don't get that proper job. Do this instead.
if you have some talent, if it's in your heart, just work hard and, you know, hopefully you'll come through.
And it's funny looking back on things, isn't it? You just sort of, you know, you put it out there and I guess you don't really listen again for quite some time. But you go back and you think, actually, that was damn good. You know, it was better than I thought.
Absolutely,
it was.
Absolutely, yeah. There's another epitaph. Actually, that was damn good.
Yeah, that's lovely. I love that. You've been an absolute star. All right. You take care. Enjoy
your
day.
Care.
All right.
Yeah, look after yourself.
And you.
You've been listening to Cattails.
To listen again to this and other tales, go to cattails.co.uk.